Sorry. Yes. I just saw the email. I was staring at the email that you sent out regarding Stanford.
Yeah, I like those stories in contrast to what we're doing.
Eventually, people get there, huh?
I guess so. What it means that they got there is interesting. We were just discussing the number of a couple people, friends, colleagues who teach, one teaches at Columbia, one teaches at Yale, who have been sending grad students our way. It's helped, it's changed some of our recruiting in the history department for African American studies grad students.
Right.
And they're both very involved in African American studies at their institutions. And but for certain students, they tell them go to Michigan. And it's both gratifying and revealing about what they're so.
Very much so.
I just entered the conversation late, but still may ask what's revealing?
Well,
What is
so did you see? Did you see the Stanford announcement that they're going to finally have Black studies?
I just saw your met. Is that what it is? They're gonna. Oh.
So we were just laughing. I like sending things like it's the juxtaposition with our own what we're doing right now that I enjoy about those stories. But then I was telling Wayne that actually Keisha and I got in a conversation about how Crystal Feimster at Yale and Farrah Griffin at Columbia have both sent us grad students in recent years. Not sent us, but told their students to apply to Michigan. That's gratifying, but it also tells you something that there's certain students that they really think, should get out of the Ivies and come to us.
Oh, I see. Oh, right. Because
And not because they think they're not capable of the Ivies, but that they're the kind of people who would benefit from being
normally people in the Ivies, was it going on to be to
would take
another
their
Ivy.
own, and they do sometimes, I'm sure, I'm sure they have students who are there who stay on or come from other places, but they have certain other undergrads or master's students that they reckon, Garrett's one of them. Farrah pushed him really hard to come here.
But when you say send them to U of M, you mean to the history, AC, or both?
Both, or I mean, in one. So there's an incoming student who's a student of Crystal's coming to history and women's studies.
Okay.
Yeah, she had a wonderful experience here with us when she gave our Zora Neale Hurston talk. It was on Pearl Primus, but we were able to pull together School of Music. Jerry Allen did a performance. It was just a really, gosh, we had such a good time.
Well, she's
Really,
great people.
such a great woman. And I think she really appreciated and was kind of blown away by the resources we have here, too. So, that was something I bet. I just think of all the possibilities of the things that she saw while she was here. That probably helped a little bit.
Oh yeah. Oh no. She's no. I mean, she. I mean, I think she's. I happen to know there's even a student of hers that she tried to get, to come study here, who ended up staying at Yale studying with her. But
She didn't try very hard.
well, no, I don't. I mean, I actually.
I'm just joking. I'm just
Yeah, I
joking.
mean, in that case, I'm not sure. I mean, I sort of think she thought it would have been better for her to come here, but. That's she wasn't that person who I did try to recruit was not feeling Ann Arbor, I can tell you that.
Understood. Understood.
So how's everybody?
We're good.
Been another week. Every week.
It's been another fast week.
Another fast week and another full week, another traumatic week in some ways. So,
So, so we will not have Helen today, but we were able with Beth and Ariel's behind the scenes work. We got some of those long awaited videos linked out off of the website. So some of the people that have been clamoring for it, they now have it at their disposal such that they can share it with others as well.
And they're already asking for Frieda and Lewis, a lot of folks who were unable, which again now leads me to think that Matthew, that 7 o'clock time, it just feels like people get pressed up when it's that 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so I just, and it's sadly, Lakeisha was at the same time.
Yeah, that was too bad. So, it was very much too bad. But we have a recording, and we should push that one because that was wild.
Yeah, I was at Lakeisha's, so I missed the final, but I would love to see the recording.
You should definitely watch it.
Is it available already? Is the recording? Because I had class, so I missed both. So was Lewis not, was he wild?
I don't know.
He was wild. Frieda was wild. Frieda was wild.
I am. Well, let me just say, I am glad that this is being recorded because I've never seen Beth do that before with her eyes.
So can I get a, I know we have, but can I get a highlight or one little?
Well, I mean, there were so many highlights.
So many.
You know, it was definitely the, you know, the diaspora talks back to the center.
And I mean, brother, he
not
was
not the DAS, no, but to the African American centrality.
It was mind blowing. I mean, the guy he started like speaking in ancient Kemetic. I mean, he's a master of languages.
He's a character
to say the least.
In my household, he's what we like to call dramatical.
Dramatical and woof. And actually, Beth, Frieda was bouncing right off of it.
Where is he from? Do you know? Or is his family?
He said he's from Jamaica. That's what Jamaica. He told me from the mountaintops. Before you came on, Matthew, it was a whole other... I knew we were about to go into something just from the setting up the technical... his description of going through COVID and... Yeah, that would so I knew.
So Frieda and what's the name were they were both speaking back. They were
so they were doing, you know, they were doing the y'all don't understand Fanon, right? From the very beginning.
Oh, I wish I would have wanted to be there so bad.
And you know, and so here's and that meant we're gonna tell you his real history. And we're going to tell you why the translations in English are wrong and you need to read them. We're going to tell you what it means when people in France say nobody in France reads Fanon. What they mean is none of the white scholars read Fanon, but everybody else reads Fanon. And, you know, we're going to talk about why he ended up in Algeria, where he was really trying to get to Senegal. And then he gets, you know, but then he becomes part of the revolution and he's naturalized as a citizen of Algeria, but that's not because he's trying to avoid sub-Saharan Africa, quite the opposite. You know, and then, so this is, starts at 4:10, right? Or 4:05. This is all going on until 5:30. And at 5:35, he decides that he's going to now go off on Afro-pessimism.
Yep. Ooh. And that it was like.
Brilliantly.
Brilliant.
Apart. Oh, just nothing left.
Shreds. And I mean, when people
call them a bunch of ethnocentric provincial. No, nothing. About the world.
did he come at what's the name? Wilderson in particular? Did he name him? Or
he didn't know names. Names. But yeah, you knew who he was talking about.
Oh wow. Oh my goodness. So that he started that at 5:30 when they're supposed to be taking questions.
It was basically his show.
Oh my god.
And Frieda was just like, throwing in like staccato notes to
wait,
like, yes, idiots, you need to understand. It was like, you know, to see her in her forte, it was like she was now able to express herself.
And yet then to watch her defer to him.
Yeah.
Frequently.
Really? Yeah, that's something we haven't seen. Wow. No, he's a, Okay, so I'm definitely going to have to check out.
Everybody needs to watch this, yeah.
But it was a webinar, wasn't it? What was the format?
It was a webinar. I mean, the other thing is he went on and on about how wonderful Frida and Benedict were as scholars and how important they are. So also did all of that.
Good.
So where can we watch it?
I
got to convert it for Ariel.
Sorry, Beth.
No, I'm going to talk with Ariel and Helen about making that one pay-per-view.
I mean, I have never had so many people send in messages this morning. Like, I missed it. I just caught the end of it. And can I please get a copy of that? It's like, somebody wanted a whole transcript. I was like, oh no, I'm not printing a DeLapo. We would have been crazy trying to do a whole transcript of, because they were breaking off into French half, you know, so often that it'd be, I don't even know how to. Description is
And he has a whole like 10 minutes on Dalits in India and how often he goes to India. I mean, the thing is brilliant, thoughtful, all kinds of stuff, but you know, quite happy to pat himself on the back every 10 minutes too.
Ooh. He said he traveled 200 days out of the year last year.
He's a big guy in more ways than one. He's a big guy physically, but he's a big presence.
And my book just came out and you really ought to read it.
Right. Well, tell him the thing costs them $60, so he really ought to make sure it's affordable.
And I got 3 books coming out this year, and you need to read all of them.
Right. He probably said exactly that, huh?
It was a master class for you all as grad students, DeLapo and Tara, for just what in the world does it look like when you're brilliant and you're really like, that was a whole other, as you said, Wayne, rarely do my eyes go like this, but I turned that machine off last night and said, you know what?
But that was fun. And yes, we should definitely get this posted and archived and all of that, because it was to behold.
It kind of reminded me of the Wild West days of DAS back when we first started and people were just like pontificating in the halls and things, and
he didn't give a paper. This was just a conversation for the benefit of the rest of them. It went off in so many tangents, so many wild directions. You just never, and you, like I said, who knew Afro-pessimism was going to be the closing? Because they didn't know.
Frida had reeling back from India. It was like he had moved around the world. Australians.
Is that right?
I mean, New Zealand, he had pretty much every culture in the world had anti-Blackness. So how are we dealing with this? Which, I mean, again, it's very expanding to your mind, but to pull it back to Afro-pessimism at the end, I was just like, whoa.
Well, that guy...
He'd already dispensed with the entire French literary establishment.
Oh, really?
That was the perfect sound effect.
No. And look, his discussion of the role of existentialism in radical politics, I mean, it really was, I mean, we're laughing, but I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, it was, you know, and it connected. I mean, there's so much that I connected to in you know, someone like Ella Baker was clearly existentialist and you know, all the SDS people. I mean, you know, it's really, at one point he said something like, pessimism and optimism are the same coin, different sides of the same coin. If you base your politics either on a sense of a inevitability of success or failure, then that's not real politics. Existentialist is this notion that you do it because it's the right thing to do, right? And because you have to, not because you and you don't know how it's going to turn out. I mean, it was just a brilliant, I mean, to take that of Marxism as well as Afro-pessimism and certain, you know, obviously a whole set of ideas around Black nationalism in the U.S. It was quite an extraordinary moment.
Poor Benedict was trying to
she was a moderator.
Trying to moderate that, and she was just like, woohoo.
Yeah, but so she intervened in a couple moments and got him refocused.
I know, because it's almost like you've got a flame, and how do you turn that flame? So it was quite a way to end our 50th, mm-hmm. you know, and speaking to our meeting today, quite a way to end our 50th conversations for this semester. We ended it with a bang, you all.
Now we're going to do one more thing, which I don't know yet whether it makes how to connect it or whether we should connect it. But I don't know if you've heard from Lotta yet, Beth, but Ajua is going to do a talk for the faculty as end of her postdoctoral year. And given the nature of her work in terms of West African literary traditions, anyway, you know, we should probably revisit it once it's done and think about how if we want to archive it and how to do so. But
oh, that's wonderful. No, he hasn't yet, but I'll thank you for letting me know something's mm-hmm. coming down the pike.
Mm-hmm. Not to promote my own talk, but in a couple of weeks, I'm giving it's like a workshop for the Africa History and Anthro workshop. And it would be cool if people in DAS want to attend, because I would love to get their input. It's a chapter of my thesis about Black women's organizing between the 1970s and 1980s against forced removals in South Africa. And it's mm-hmm. partly about the role that women's church groups played in kind of providing some of the support and platform from which women then went on to organize into leadership positions around land.
When will it be?
It'll be Tuesday the 30th. At 3 p.m. I'll forward you the email once we have it.
Oh, please do. I'll send it around, because Derek will send it. Right. And I try to remember to always send it out to all of our faculty, because if you're not on that listserv, you don't get it.
Right, right. Yeah, just in case it's of interest to some in the DAS community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was at Lakeisha's, partly why I was at Lakeisha's talk, because there's some interesting connections to think with there.
So let me just ask for updates. Questions. I actually have a topic which would actually be good for me to bring up today, given who's here and who's not, but I'll hold that and we'll do updates first.
So one quick update is we have our interview, Ashley Tahir and I interview with Julius next Tuesday.
Oh, great.
And so we confirmed that day with him, but the other day I sent him the link and I have not heard back from him, so I got to double check, but we're scheduled for that. And I wanted to see if you have any, I want to share with you the questions we have so far and to see if you have any thoughts on these. Can I do that now?
Please. Do I need to make you a, oh no, you did it, okay.
Let me know for me to make it larger.
Ooh, this is going to give him an opportunity to really go deep. Mm-hmm. I love these.
Great questions. Yeah.
These are great. And I'd hope in number four, he does, you know, also describe how much Marlon Ross was instrumental. Marlon I can't tell you the blood, sweat, and tears he gave to 111. And he was, you know, he and Julius really were instrumental. And, you know, since he was at that time the associate director, he really, really worked very hard on it.
So I had a question to asking him about particular moments, colleagues, something else, mm-hmm. but I took that out hoping that it was, I wasn't sure about asking about particular colleagues, but I was hoping to ask him to identify colleagues, but I was hoping in the course of some of these others, he would do that. Also didn't say, ask any question about the common wind. I wanted to get a little guidance on how I might want to do that. So I'm sorry, Matthew, what were you saying?
So on the common wind, I think the approach I would take on the common wind is just to talk about its reception, the excitement it's generated, and his reflections on that. Just because it's more about making sure that it's mentioned in the interview for archival reasons. Then I don't know that the particularities of why it came out, when it came out, and all that matter that much for this interview.
Right.
And the fact that Das and History did have that incredible conference for it long before the book, you know, came. True. You know, Martha worked so hard on that, that's you know, true. To work together for him. So, you know, I mean, he was so proud of that poster that they created. And I mean, the work that went into it, he really down to, you know, the image on it, the cover, it was just a lot. I remember we spent that whole year working on that conference.
So,
That was spring 2009, I think. That's my memory. Or no, fall 2008, I'm sorry. It wasn't spring, it was fall. Right after the election. But so I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how you... Yeah, it's a complicated one. What I was going to say is on the 111, just something about how it evolved over the years he was teaching it. Or
I'm trying to get that in 4 and 5. You think something's missing?
You said how it evolved. Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, no, I don't. I think it's there. I mean, I might ask something generic about you know, what frustrations, you know, or did he have, or were there moments in which he thought there were missed opportunities for Das in his years there, something like that?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I say I might ask a question, generic question about his moments of frustration for him in his years at Das, or what he thought, were there missed opportunities he thought in that, something like that. To give him the space to say something, critical, not so much that it's critical, but something, I don't mean critical. I do mean critical, but not in a negative sense, but rather in a sense of, you know,
analysis.
And analytical. Like, what did he, you know, what did he think about how the department developed over time?
Yeah, it seems like that would fit nicely between 6 and 7.
Yeah, that's part of what I was getting at. Mm-hmm. The thing there.
It's sort of the other part about 7, right? Which is what was underappreciated, but what were the missed opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
Missed opportunities in the unit or by the unit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which made him having him talk about some of the constraints put on the unit. You know, I mean, you know, budgetary issues. I just think of some of the times when, how many times before James, administrators would go across the street to ask for things and be turned away. And it was very, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I could, I don't know if I want to explicitly ask that, but it may be in follow-up. I could.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You could ask him a question about university support. You know. Right.
And what was the way, what was the way you just framed it, Beth?
Just, I think that's a great way of saying university support.
Okay.
You know, whether it be when we were attempting to become a department, you know, some yeah. of, yeah, there's just a lot. And I think that describing it that way will leave it open for him to describe what he perceived as. Mm-hmm. You know,
and I was thinking about sharing with him a couple of days before, so he can
yeah, yeah. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't. Do you have a question to sort of ask him about students in general, or about individual students he remembers?
I don't identify students as such. Perhaps I should.
Well, I mean, I just know that he had some students, obviously. Well, you know, that he has sustained connections to. But I also know that, you know, he was deeply influential on somebody like Jennifer Jones. And I don't even know if he knows that, though. Because she took on 11 with him.
Yeah, I think that fits there, Stephen. Like, do any of these stand out to you for any reason? And then kind of lead that into the students that he connected with over the years, because he yeah. was one of the most popular in terms of people coming to his office all the time.
Good, thank you. Okay, so this is very helpful. Thanks. Reword these and incorporate them in there.
Looks great.
Okay, thank you.
I will try to share my screen. Okay, so what you all are looking at is the product of my work last week and over the weekend. This is a couple years worth of study abroads. I'm not sure if it's 3 years or more, but I can tell you that it sucked up a lot of my computing power to get it up to the drive. And the next step in this, I've had a conversation with Nisha, is to have Nisha look at this, but I need to make sure that we give her the access rights such that she can put the right years on these experiences. So this is raw footage that we would probably want to edit at some point, because when you look at the file sizes, you can see that this is well beyond what your typical movie size file is, which is typically around 3 to 4 gigabytes. And here we have things that are averaging about 10, 11 gigabytes. So, but I will ask Nisha if she will help us identify the years that these experiences happen.
I was gonna ask, that was my first question.
Yes.
So we don't know what years they are. Are they interviews or are they coverage?
As best as I can tell from looking at a couple of them, I took some sneak peeks. These are the actual study abroad footages of when they went out, and in some cases doing the classroom training, the interactions that might have included visits with host nation personnel. So I'm hopeful that Nisha, I'm led to believe that these were done by Nisha based on what I'm seeing. So that's why I wanted her to have a look to see if she could help us identify it.
Tara. Star here?
That's great. Thank you, Wayne.
I'm thinking this is a documentary with this raw footage. And I hate to say that, but.
Could be, yeah.
Tara's like, yeah, that's great, but why are you telling me?
I mean, I think that's a pretty big task, but so let's not get ahead of ourselves. But one thing to do in looking at it is to think about whether that's true. You know, is, you know, because it, not necessarily, you know, and not from a perspective of can we do it in a month, because clearly we're not, but rather, do we have the raw material here that could eventually be a documentary on Nisha's approach to study abroad?
Sure.
And we could have an expose.
No. Right. I have raw material there, Ben.
I have a title for it. You ready?
I'm ready.
Diva abroad.
Woo. Stephen, let me remind you, this is being recorded.
I know we're taping. So. We're taping. I would say that to Nisha happily if she were here. Hi, Nisha.
And she would love it. She would love it.
So I was thinking about you, Stephen, because one of the things I did was I tried to keep it up near the top so Nisha wouldn't have to go searching for it. It would be right there because I don't want her to get frustrated and give up before she even starts.
You said you're thinking about me. Did I do that? Did I get frustrated?
I'm making it easy for Nisha to find, because if she's looking around, she might stumble onto this recording.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
But there are a lot more of these. This is what I was able to have digitized off of the magnetic media with the help of Timberly Whitus about 2 years ago. If our fiscal restrictions relax, I might try to do some more of these as summer work, but it remains to be seen.
I mean, the other question is whether whether these are candidates for one of these online AI transcription things. In other words, if having transcriptions of these would be useful, if there's not enough dialogue, you know, I mean, I can see lots of reasons why there wouldn't make sense. But if it, or if it's, you know, it's not, the sound's not clear enough, or there's not, it's the same, it's repetitive. I mean, there's lots of reasons why it wouldn't make sense. But if it does, then it's something we should consider.
I think the audio quality on at least some of it does make it worthwhile. And we do have people that our student hires can come in and clean it up in some cases, or make sense of what was actually said. So that's something we could explore.
That'd be amazing, because I know, you know, with the module, the same module was taught over the different years. However, you know, we translated it into different languages, you know, to have that displayed so that people could see the breadth of, you know, how many different places we went. Some of the, you know, when I think back on, you know, just simply the fact that we were able to survive in some of the spaces leaves me a little, you know, I mean, we'd be on township roads that no street names, you know. It was really, really powerful in the ways that it truly was community outreach in a meaningful way that I know deeply moved many of the folks who participated. So I think it's something powerful that should be.
Well, that's, you know, that's one way to think about the documentary, is a mix of this footage with retrospective interviews with the students, or maybe even some of the community folks, collaborators as well. So, yeah, I'm not, again, I don't, I'm not thinking of something slapdash by any means. This would be an ongoing project that would probably take us, you know, months, years to do. But that's sort of the point, right? That we could be, that we don't have to be, we don't have to do, limit ourselves to what we can do very quickly.
Which kind of leads to our update. Tara, you want to tell them what we came up with?
Sure. So Beth and Ashley, why was I forgetting Ashley's name for a second? She was even my student. Beth and Ashley and I met the other day to talk about the Das Alums Oral History Project, I think we've called it, sort of broadly speaking. Beth, I don't know if you want to, you had a great way of outlining it into the categories that we're kind of targeting and prioritizing.
It turned out to be much larger than we anticipated. You know, we kept growing. So we have two basic categories, the campus and the community. And for the campus, we have, you know, alumni who were a part of DAS. We have students who were impacted by DAS. We have staff who were impacted by DAS. We have graduate students that were impacted who felt a bond with DAS. And then we have actual GCP, our graduate certificate program alumni, who are impacted by DAS. So that's just the campus. So the other side is the community. So we're looking at that from the perspective of the local, like the local community, people like Debbie Mitchell, James Lee, folks who've been very connected to the department over the years, for decades, who have still remained, you know, very interested in what's happening. Then we have, on a national level, people who have been impacted when they were here or who were connected to DAS through different programs and things that we worked on, including, I think I told Matthew about it, but we have one of our, he was not an alum, but he now is very interested in founding a scholarship for incoming for students. And Jonathan is the executive producer for Lovecraft County. So he's doing very well in life and he really wants to give back, but he's now on a national level, like Minna is. Minna just got named to the Universal Music Group as the executive vice president in charge of diversity. So, you know, these folks who are nationally connected to us. And then we've got international people. So that leads us to people like Catherine Burns and others who assisted us with our study abroad when we were in these other countries, as well as people who are Moody scholars and people who had been a part of our alumni, but in a different way. So they're all people who've been connected to DAS in some way or another, but they all have an affinity towards DAS and just the different ways that they're going to provide a different lens to the history of DAS. You know, whether it was something that helped them, I'm thinking of like Dumasani Tabede at the University of Venda, you know, him being a Moody scholar and then returning to Venda and assisting us when we went to Venda. It was like a beautiful mutual relationship that happened there. There's so many of these stories. And so if we just capture a few of these, we're shooting this year for this semester to try to just do a few, but oh my goodness.
Please, just a few.
Yeah. I mean,
the key thing is, right, both things, having the categories and the lists in place and then getting started, right? Those are the two pieces that make the sense.
So. Yeah, and Beth and Ashley are kind of taking the lead and I'm going to join them for interviews where there's an overlap with study abroad in particular. Okay. So okay. I know Beth, you had mentioned, I think Devon Keane is her name, staff member. So there are a few of those that I'll join in.
With Devon would be great, or having her early on, given, I mean, she did obviously a wonderful little clip for the Evans Young piece. And it would be great to have her story.
Beth, you and Tara's input is a great segue, because my next was to give everyone an update in that what we are doing could potentially become ginormous. Not sure if that's a word yet, but Webster's will pick it up sooner or later if we continue to use it. But as this project moves on, I know that space is a concern. So yep. Helen and I have been talking about that, working with LSA on it. This week, I had a conversation with Amy Peters, who is the director of research computing and infrastructure, and made her aware of this requirement. So I hope that in working with her people, this will gain some traction and hopefully more of an allocation for us, particularly as the university makes its transition for future computing.
So I don't know anything about this, except that there is this word that I just put in the chat, Omeka, that seems to be one of the standard softwares for digital archiving. It'd be interesting to know what they think of that, whether that's the standard or whether, and if they're going in a different direction, why?
Okay.
But at least most of it, I mean, for those public history sites I know about that, where I know anything about the software, everybody's using that for the storage component that okay. I know of.
I shall look into it.
Just a small piece on the oral history piece. I have yet to follow up with Richard Ross, but have his email and will be doing so. And obviously I'd like to get to that sooner rather than later. I know once I've had communication with him, we can talk about who would like to be part of that. But as a reminder, he's an undergrad, was a key figure in the pre-CAS history of Black history classes. He has this letter that he circulated over the years that in which he claims credit for there being African studies in the center, which doesn't fit our narrative. And I'm sure he's not right about that, or at least he's overblowing what he did, but obviously we want to capture that too. So that's on the agenda as well. So are there any other updates? I do have this sort of one kind of sensitive topic I'd like to bring up, but.
No other updates from my side, except to say that we're chugging along with the documentary. Right. Tahir and Dani and I, we had a good workshop with her this week on Premiere, which was really helpful in terms of brainstorming, because she's got such a brilliant mind visually for thinking through what'll work. So thanks again, Stephen, for facilitating that. It's great to have her involved.
Well, you, Stephen, talked about how much she's doing for credit and versus how much more.
Yeah, I met with her. She told me about the work. She updated me what they're doing, and we talked about what's going to. So that work she's doing with you guys will be her project for the class. We're going to work out exactly what that means. But
okay,
we're having a conversation about that.
Great. Okay. Great. Thank you. So let me bring up my sensitive topic. And you'll see why it's sensitive in a second. I'm really looking for some short-term advice, but I, in the context of a long-term plan that, or not long-term, but a medium-term plan for addressing this. I don't, we haven't talked about it, but I was fairly uncomfortable with the presentation of the artistic artifacts on the website that were really are material objects and artistic work from in a very colonialist framework, I thought, that Helen presented. And which isn't to say that there isn't something, there isn't reason to have that stuff present on the website. It just has to be contextualized in a way that it wasn't. It isn't at this point. And there is a graduate student in the history department who we think may be interested in working with us on how to do that. Atar is helping me make connections with. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting her last name. It's Comfort.
Yeah, Comfort Mtotwa. Who's from Malawi originally. She's in the, she's a third year PhD.
Comfort's amazing.
Comfort has a background in museums and kind of the politics of that, of museum collecting and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
The short-term advice I'm looking for is, with encouragement, I'll say from Tara and Tahir, think we should take it down in the interim. Mm-hmm. So that when we put it up, it is got a framework that explains to people why it's there and how it came to be a part of our collection. Right. So that's and I don't mean this in any way to be critical of anybody's choices making, just that it seems like it's not the right. I'm concerned that its placement will be misunderstood in all kinds of ways, without a better contextualizing of it. So I wanted to just, I guess what I'm sort of asking is, does that make sense to people to take it down? Or is there an alternative way so that it doesn't have to come down while we get it to the point where it's better framed?
Could you repeat that question? You said, is there an alternative? I'm sorry.
There's an alternative to taking it down that would allow it to stay up before we've gotten it properly contextualized.
So is that to say that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah,
someone.
I believe we can unpublish that page until we can work with someone to eliminate some things and conceptualize other things that helps us gain more broad support, because we don't want anything that's going to be a pain point for anyone. And along those lines, some of our photographs might be in there as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I just posted in the chat the two pages that we had chatted about as needing further commentary and stuff.
So, Matthew, if I to initially, when you started talking, I thought we were talking about photographs. That's what I thought was the.
And I guess I. I'll admit to having not looked at it carefully enough beyond my initial disquiet. But yes, they're both they're photos of objects and photos of people.
Yeah. Right. I wasn't being clear. The photos of people. So yes,
both of those.
Am I hearing you correctly, Matthew? That you're wondering if, well, are you thinking ideally we wouldn't have to fully take them off, but you're wondering if there's a way we could responsibly?
I don't mean it that way. I'm just saying, I'm asking for, before we decide to take them down, I'm asking if there's an alternative. I'm not necessarily preferring an alternative.
Gotcha. Just wanted to explore that.
Right.
Those pages are not permanent. And if we wanted to, I could go in and unpublish them. Everything, all the work that was done to put them up and to save them into the archive would still remain. It just wouldn't be visible to the public.
So
I think that that's probably what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can just, I think that, you know, the rationale is simple. If anybody asks, is we're still working on how to curate them properly.
Right. Because though, especially the objects, I mean, that's such a jumble of, yeah. I'm seeing things there from Dana Rush in History of Art, donations from Professor Lockhart, donations from, who passed away? Stephen Ahmed.
Some of Ahmed stuff is in there?
When he came back from visiting Africa, he brought us some trinkets and things that we had displayed in the library. So it's all these different types of things. There's something from the UB Blake collection there that was music collection. I saw that Los Angeles declaration. Yeah. So it's all kinds of things. Yes. I think it would be best to have those cataloged just as you would, you know, books so that people will know what they're looking at.
Yeah, because catalog grouped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's four images of the Das lunchbox that Chuck, one of the...
I know, I was looking at that. The lunchbox.
Which is cool, but it doesn't fit there. What is the City of Los Angeles thing? It's a declaration?
Yeah, I think it was something to UB Blake.
Oh, it's part of it. So the other thing is to not have these be one page, but to break them out by different collections. But then also to have, I mean, they just need to be curated effectively.
Yeah.
And obviously the ones that are sensational in certain kinds of ways or colonialized in other ways.
This collection is out on ArtMoy, and what we can do is work with someone to help conceptualize or contextualize what we do have so that when we unpublish this, the information is not only available or visible on the website, but it is also retained in ArtMoy, which is where all of these images are originating from currently.
And I think when Helen put those in there, it's a great cataloging system because we can add information to it. Right. I think that's why she intentionally did such a great job in terms of picking that as a proper vehicle to, you know, to hold the different pieces.
I would just like to add that I believe when the artwork section was created, it was our help from ITS who just uploaded all the photos that we had linked. I don't think this was necessarily a creative choice by Helen or necessarily by anyone, because that's how it ended up going up. And because of the timeline and the need to have things ready to look visibly nice for the opening, it just ended up this way. But they think these things are editable, and we could add context below any of the images that we decide to keep.
Well, and I know it was a huge amount of work, which is partly why I'm not interested in, any kind of, like, this was a mistake. I'm not suggesting that. I just think, again, my concern is misinterpretation, and therefore they need to be better framed and contextualized.
Okay.
What was the system, Beth and Wayne, that you were mentioning? ArtMoy?
ArtMoy. That's where we have over 1,100 images stored of what you're looking at on the website. That's where we have the images parked.
I see.
It's a subscription that we pay for to retain, but it keeps high quality images, and we can add information as it becomes available to us to refine each one of those images. I think we gave Tahir access to ArtMoy, and we shared it with him a while back.
I also have access.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm just asking because if we do bring Comfort in, we'd want to give her access to that too, if she's doing some of the curating and cataloging. So that's good to know. Thanks.
Yep. So if there is a consensus, we can unpublish these pages subsequent to closing out our connection here.
I have put them both into draft mode.
Okay.
Thank you, Ariel.
Thank you.
Ariel is the fastest, I tell you. She moves with quickness.
Yeah, she's cost us about 3 computers, but I'm not complaining.
She burns 2 computers?
I don't think she cost us them. Somebody, there's some quality control issues somewhere else.
I would say. Oh, my goodness.
Wayne's position is that computers struggle to keep up with her.
I see. I see. Well, that absolves some other people as well. So, but I hear you. If there's nothing else, let me just say, I want to end with a little piece of good news about DAS World. It's not directly related to our work, but I'm just want those, and there are some people in the room who have contributed to this, many people, but we are about to have a graduation ceremony with 13 majors and 19 minors. And while those numbers may not sound
that's big.
Through the roof, that's anybody who knows where we were a couple of years ago knows how far we've come in a short amount of time. And Stephen has a piece of that. Beth has a piece of that. Wayne has a piece of that. Ariel has a piece of that. So I'm just, it's just a, you know, and the sun's out today. It's all good. I'm just feeling that all good. So, and we have this website that's all good. You know, we've just, and a vision. I mean, that's the most important, exciting thing about the website for me is that we have these ideas that going to keep a bunch of us busy for a long time. And that's really, really exciting. So, just a kind of good moment. So,
like Nina Simone, you're feeling good. I had to jump in before Steve.
Because I'm not what's it, young and anymore. So. I didn't know where you were going, Beth.
I was going with feeling good.
Stephen, a real quick question: when you had your camera stop, the images that pop up was of someone looking through an album stack. Was that an image of you?
No, that's not me. That's James DeWitt Yancey, better known as Jay Dilla.
Okay.
Jay Dilla, the Detroit producer, hip hop producer.
Detroit's own. Dilla Day.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Enjoy this weekend. It's gonna get really warm. Just remember, it's going to get cold again later, so you don't